This is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM. And we are joined, I believe, by Michel Chosedowski. Are you there, sir?
Yes, good evening. Delighted to be on the program.
Well, it's great to have you. Global Research is a wonderful site. And you are sounding an alarm about the danger of around this issue of North Korea and the U.S. policies, the danger of nuclear war. You're going to be speaking in Hamilton on the 18th, 24 Main Street, and on the 19th in Toronto at 6:30 p.m. at 777 Bathurst Street. What's the message? Why are you putting the emphasis on this at this time?
Well, I've been doing research on nuclear weapons for more than 10 years. In fact, for 15 years, starting with the so-called 2001 Nuclear Posture Review. And I think we've had a tremendous shift from the Cold War era. We're no longer within the sphere of mutually assured destruction, where both sides realized that the use of nuclear weapons would actually lead to the unthinkable, annihilation. We recall that Hiroshima, the bomb on Hiroshima, led to 100,000 deaths in 7 seconds. And the bombs today are at least, some of them are 10, 6 to 12 times, but others are 100 times more powerful in terms of explosive capacity than those used by the United States in 1945.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking to Michel Chosedowski. He's going to be in Toronto and in Hamilton, Hamilton on the 18th, Toronto on the 19th. I liked your point in an article. By the way, as you say, you've been writing about this very consistently, and many people should go back and read the articles from 2015 and earlier. You point out that this isn't Kennedy and Khrushchev, two men who really understood that how dangerous the situation was. This is a different circumstance. Could you elaborate on that?
Well, first of all, it's a different circumstance because the bilateral relations with Russia are at an all-time low. That's one dimension. But they're also with the Chinese. Starting in the Obama administration, even before, they've been threatening China under the pivot to Asia. So that international diplomacy is very different to what it was during the Cold War. And you have somebody like Trump, who has a minimal understanding of the impact of nuclear weapons, and who is supported also by Pentagon so-called scientists. I mean, these are real scientists, but they're on contract with the Pentagon, and they will say, and I quote, tactical nuclear weapons, the mini nukes, are, quote, harmless to the surrounding civilian population because the explosion is underground. These are bunker buster bombs, but in effect, they have an explosive capacity, a yield between one third and six times the Hiroshima bomb, and the latest version are even more powerful. Mm-hmm. So we're not talking about peacemaking bombs, but the thing is that people are led to believe now that nuclear weapons are just not very much different from other weapons, but they're wrong. They are instruments of which ultimately threaten the future of humanity. And the problem is that decision makers very often are unaware of the consequences of the use of these weapons.
Mm-hmm. Well, I noticed at the Global Research, I was reading today an account of this, the electoral, two things, the electoral victory at the UN, that in the sense of getting 122 countries voting for a strategy calling for nuclear disarmament. And then also the Nobel Prize has been given to this organization, the Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament. It just underlines that something for Canada, we didn't vote for those. Canada did not vote for that motion at the United Nations, and I guess they joined a boycott of it, didn't they?
Well, you know, there's a lot of misinformation or disinformation. No, Canada did not vote for that motion, which is a motion to prohibit nuclear weapons. Now, interestingly enough, if you look at the press reports, they say the nine so-called visible or declared nuclear weapon states, but that also includes Israel, and then they list them, and then they stick North Korea in there. North Korea, whether we like them or not, was the only nuclear weapons power that that voted yes for the prohibition of nuclear weapons.
That's a very, very important point.
No, I mean, but more seriously, is that that was never mentioned in any of the press reports. Now, I can quote you here a report, which is, I have it right in front of me, it's a report from the Ottawa Citizen, which is October 28th. And it says, textually, but those nations with nuclear weapons, including the U.S., Russia, China, North Korea, France, and others, voted against it. Okay? Bloomberg News Services noted in its article, and then they talked about Canada. Of course, Canada also voted against it. Mm-hmm. But North Korea didn't vote against it. And then I have another report in The Guardian, and it says, now, we're looking at North Korea as a threat to global security, which is an absurd proposition as a small country, which has been threatened with nuclear weapons for 67 years, starting in 1950. Mm-hmm. South Korea was a nuclear weapons state for about 10 years. The United States had installations in South Korea directed at, not only at North Korea, but also at China and Russia. And then they come up and say that North Korea is a threat to global security, when in fact it is the only nuclear weapons power that actually voted yes for that initiative, which is now which was granted the Nobel Peace Prize. So bravo for what does it suggest? Canadians are against nuclear war, and would have, if there had been a referendum, we would have probably won. We would have had a yes as well. And what it says, perhaps, is that North Korea, which lost 30% of its population in U.S.-led carpet bombing from 1950 to 1953, they lost 30% of their population, and they are presented as a threat to global security, and yet their government, whether we like them or not, or whether we like his hairstyle, is irrelevant, but their government actually said yes to the prohibition of nuclear weapons on behalf of the North Korean population. Yeah. And our government took, but they didn't consult us, they just said, no, we're in favor of nuclear weapons. Yeah. But I'll tell you another thing, and that's very important. 1939 was the beginning of the Manhattan Project. And the Manhattan Project was integrated by three countries, United States, Britain, Canada. And in 1942, the United States Manhattan Project had started envisaging the use of nuclear weapons, not against Nazi Germany or Japan, but against the Soviet Union. And that happened at a time when the United States and the Soviet Union were allies. On the 15th of September 1945, less than a month after the Hiroshima bombings, which were on August 6th, the United States released documents. Of course, they were classified and they were declassified many, many years later. And that declassified documents revealed that in 1945, before the Cold War, they had already a plan to bomb 66 cities in the Soviet Union with 204 nuclear weapons. And those, in other words, that is simply wiping the Soviet Union off the map. And that plan was formulated not during the Cold War, but during World War II. Mm-hmm. So it redefines the whole understanding of history, because essentially that system of weapons had already been envisaged against the Soviet Union while they were allies during World War II. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, when the Soviet Union developed its own nuclear weapons in 1949, they then blamed the Soviet Union as creating an arms race. There would not have been an arms race.
The race was already on, wasn't it?
Pardon?
I said the race was obviously already on one side.
Well, the race was on since 1942. Yeah. And there would not have been a nuclear arms race had the United States decided not to develop nuclear weapons and more precisely, not to envisage a project to bomb 66 cities, which was formulated when they were allies and released on the 15th of September 1945. Now then, subsequently, during the Cold War, they had a much more ambitious project, which was 1,200 cities, and those were in Soviet Union, Eastern Europe and the Eastern Bloc countries, and also China. And there we're talking about, of course, nuclear bombs, which were much more powerful than those of Hiroshima. One has to understand these different aspects, and one has to understand that, with all due respect to Donald Trump, fire and fury precedes Donald Trump. It was part of, well, in fact, it was really part of the Truman Doctrine.
It's been in the U.S. military DNA for a long time. Is it?
Well, absolutely. But there's a very interesting element about that. I've been looking at Truman's writings, of course, when he ordered the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, his famous speech, which was broadcast on August 9th, he said, "The world will note that the first atomic bomb has been dropped on Hiroshima, a military base, and that was because we wanted to save the lives of innocent civilians." Those were his precise words at the time. Mm-hmm. But now, subsequently, he made something even more. Well, I can't say it's absurd or dramatic, but it's cynical and it's criminal. Mm-hmm. He said that God is on our side. I'll give you the quote on that, because when the nuclear bomb was developed, Harry Truman said, also in another radio address, he concluded that God was on the side of America with regard to the use of nuclear weapons, and said that, quote, "He may guide us to use nuclear weapons, or to use it, nuclear weapons, in his ways and his purposes. We thank God that the bomb has come to us instead of to our enemies, and we pray that he may guide us to use it in his ways and for his purposes." Mind you, he's saying...
I wonder if he reflected on God's decision to give one to Russia.
Well, the thing is, he made that statement on August 9, 1945, and 3 weeks later, They released the document, which I whether it was sanctioned by God or not, I couldn't tell. Yes. But that particular document was 3 weeks later on the 15th of September, and it was 66 cities and 2004 atomic bombs.
Yeah. By the way, these are reproduced. That's your website, Global Research. I was reading some of that, and this is the only place I could find it, frankly. But it's very
well.
Telling.
The documents are there. I mean, on the documents, all those documents are there. You have to go and look for them and analyze them.
But, I want to tell people, but just a moment, I want to remind everybody, this is Michel Chasadovsky, Global Research. He's going to be speaking in Hamilton on the 18th, next Monday, and at 6:30, I believe, at 24 Main Street. He's also going to be speaking in Toronto at 6:30 at 777 Bathurst, a different book list, on the 19th. And Michel, I will just mention, I recall a Japanese philosopher attending, I think, a peace meeting, might have been right here in Toronto, was asked, he said he's often asked himself the question, why did the U.S. drop the second bomb? He said, I can understand military mind, the first bomb. And he said, I've asked myself, why the second? And then he said, after 10 years of meditation, I realized that that's all they had.
Well, I think that they were also, the first and second bomb had different characteristics, and I think they wanted maybe to test the second bomb as well.
See what it would do.
To flash back to the campaign to prohibit nuclear weapons, I've been looking through the votes, and I was shocked when I learned that the Japanese government decided to vote in favor of nuclear weapons.
Is that
alongside the others, and after having been the victims, they were certainly not again. Mm-hmm. They were not making that decision on behalf of their population, who were victims of nuclear weapons.
No, as you indicated, these populations understand the danger, and had the Canadian population been consulted, they would not have boycotted that vote. People who know better for us go ahead and do it anyway. I wonder if we could underline something you said about the North Korean position, because this matter of what is this so-called what the crisis, basically an artificial crisis, is about, I know I've read Chinese statements and others who say North Korea simply wants a peace agreement. They don't have peace yet between the United States and Korea, going back to the Korean War. And all they all they have to have is a peace agreement, and this problem would go away.
There are three parties to the peace agreement. The DPRK, North Korea, on the one hand, the United States, and China. Well, they say the Chinese Voluntary Army because they participated in the Korean War on the side of North Korea. But in effect, the United States has always refused to enter into any kind of peace negotiations further to the armistice. The armistice they cease hostilities, but there's no peace agreement. Mm-hmm. And that's the correct statement. The North Koreans want a peace agreement. Now, there's so much emphasis on the rhetoric of Chairman Kim, which I think is irrelevant because this is political narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to look at what both sides have done, and South Korea and the United States have been waging these war games every single year, and they've been threatening with nuclear weapons, mm-hmm. as I said, for 67 years. Now,
they're very provocative the way they do it, are they not? On this program, we've talked to people who say that the exercises are a little obscure as to what their intent is. Dangerous planes who might be carrying actual weapon, nuclear, fly close to the border, that sort of thing, where, you know, if you're responsible for the security of your people, it's a dicey situation.
You're talking about what?
The U.S. military exercises along the...
Well, absolutely. Close to, no, they're very much at the border. Anything can happen. And we know that history is largely determined by mistakes and manipulations and stupidity and yes. misinformation. Okay, mm-hmm. And of course, Trump doesn't have a training in politics, nor does he have a training in military technology. And he goes by his advisors, and his advisors possibly don't even have that either. Mm-hmm. And it's clear that the use of any kind of nuclear device will unleash a Third World War. And the geography of that region is very important. North Korea has borders with China and Russia. Okay, it's a buffer state, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And North Korea is not the target. The ultimate target is Russia and China. Mm-hmm. The United States have been threatening them for you know more than half a century with nuclear weapons. Mm-hmm. So that you know we have to understand that people who have studied the Middle East, they say the road to Tehran goes through Damascus. They understand the geopolitics of the Syrian war. Well, the North Korean war is similar to that in many regards. But another element, and I think everybody must understand the geography of that region. Mm-hmm. The distance between the capital of South Korea, Seoul, and the border with North Korea is less than Toronto to Hamilton, okay? So, or let's say Manhattan to New Jersey.
That's a worrying piece of information.
Yeah, I mean, the distances are so short. The international airport is 3 kilometers from the North Korean border. We're not talking about Canadian distances. This is a relatively small country, mm-hmm. and any kind of use of nuclear weapons is not directed against North Korea. It's directed against the entire Korean Peninsula. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that even the President Moon, who has a reputation of being progressive and all that. And he is, mm-hmm. but once he assumed power, replacing Mrs. Park, who was indicted and who's now serving a prison sentence, impeached and indicted, but he was talking about dialogue and so on. The Americans don't allow him to do that, and they've got their own people in South Korean defense and intelligence. They control the armed forces and so on. So that there's a very ambivalent situation in South Korea at the moment. But the thing is that the geography of that of Northeast Asia is such. You have 5 countries: North Korea, South Korea, Russia, China, Japan. They're all within swimming distance from one another, more or less. I mean, and then you have Jeju Island, which is a military base which struck right opposite Shanghai. And the Chinese are not stupid. They know that ultimately they don't particularly like the North Koreans. I can tell you that their relations are not very good. But they realize that if there's a war against North Korea, it will spill over.
Yes.
Vladivostok is about 100 kilometers from the North Korean border, okay? Mm-hmm. Like less than Montreal to Ottawa. Maybe a bit more than 100. But the thing is that Donald Trump probably doesn't have a clue as to the geography of that region. And
he uses crayons, I think, when he does his work. As near as I can tell.
Well, yeah. Well, they
This is Michel Chassidusky, by the way. He's going to be speaking in Hamilton on the 18th at 24 Main Street. You're going to be in Toronto on the 19th at 777 Bathurst, different book lists, 6:30 both places. Michel, you really mentioned the subjective element in this, and you're just describing the limitations of Donald Trump and the people around him. And by the way, as people who were around, people forget George Bush was very close to being, you know, less than competent, and Obama similarly. The military people don't seem to be terribly enlightened. I get the feeling sometimes that people should study that movie, Dr. Strangelove, to get an idea what the place is like. Do you ever get that feeling?
Well, you know, the thing is, people don't read. Well, they rely very much on mainstream media, network television, and so on. Now, if you start to dig and you look at declassified top secret documents and so on, then you get a very different feeling as to what's happening. Mm-hmm. But now, just to give you another example, just a couple of years ago, the Rand Corporation brought out a report. And that report, and now the Rand Corporation is a think tank, which is essentially an appendage of the Pentagon, but they hire university professors and they do simulation. And the Rand Corporation came up and they published a report which was called War with China, which was commissioned by the U.S. Army. And this is the War with China, Thinking Through the Unthinkable, okay? Mm-hmm. And then they have a bunch of scholars and scientists, etc. And essentially, they're simulating a war with China in the future, and which involves nuclear weapons. And ultimately, the message, I think, of course, the message is really to China. They want the Chinese to read this. It's a public document. Mm-hmm. So there you are. Now, just a few years back, that was, well, no, 10 years ago, mm-hmm. In the context of annual war games, the United States has war games. I'm sorry, they have war scenarios, the simulations, okay? And they have them every year. And occasionally one or two get leaked. In this case, it was a leak by the Washington Post. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, it was leaked by William Arkin, who writes for the Washington Post. I think it was deliberate when you leak something, you want people to read it.
It's called sending a signal. Yes.
Well, sure, but it defined the contours of global warfare because it was a scenario of a U.S.-led war against four fictitious countries which were called, and you will recognize them, Shuria, Rubek, Nemesi, and Ermingham. Okay, or Ermingham and Nemesi. So it's China, Russia, Iran, and North Korea.
Yeah.
Now they have a logic that there's a whole timeline. I have it published in my earlier book. So there you have a war scenario involving these four countries, and those are the key four countries which are being targeted in the present context. China, Russia, Iran, and North Korea. And the two which are in the front line of being targeted are Iran and North Korea because they're smaller and they're weaker than Russia and China, and particularly China, which is becoming an economic superpower with very, you know, with implications for the whole geopolitics of Eurasia. Mm-hmm. With the Belt and Road Initiative.
Yeah.
Well, so that's the background.
Well, you've convinced me we need the movement for nuclear disarmament. We used to have one, but the foundation for reviving it, you've laid out very nicely. This is Michel Chassidusky. He's going to be speaking on the 18th in Hamilton at 24 Main Street, Toronto, at 777 Bathurst on the 19th. Michel Chassidusky, your work is very, very important. We're really proud to have you on the show. Thank you very much.
Well, I'm delighted to be on the program. look forward to seeing you in Toronto then.
Absolutely.
And Hamilton.
We will all be there. I'm sure there's going to be a crowd. Thank you.
Very good. Bye. Okay. Bye for now.
Bye-bye. Michelle Chuzadovsky and Global Research. Go to the site and read. The things he was citing are available there. I think we have perhaps a minute or... I have a sports shock. Michelle told us a hidden piece of information about North Korea that they signed the thing to let's disarm.
That was a vote in the United Nations,
and
they voted with the majority of the world's nations,
With the 120 countries. On the sports front, I have a similar story. The best known prize fighter in the world, Floyd Mayweather, has just visited Chechnya, where he embraced the leader there and said, "This is my man." And there is a rumor that Floyd's going to become a Russian citizen. I don't think it's going to happen, kids, but he's there. And he didn't mind that they talked about it. I think we're going to play a bit of Bob Dylan as we get out of here. This is Phil Taylor of Taylor Port. I want to thank Francois and Phil, and we'll see you next week.